looking for them. It's kind of like a Where's Wally challenge in terms of the visuals.
With our cameras ready, we slowly walk towards a rocky outcrop to see if there is any action.
And we're looking for deep horizontal cracks, especially ones with sunny ledges just out in front, maybe with some native vegetation next to them. That'd be the best.
This is Anna Yeoman. She's looking into the viewfinder of a DSLR camera with a zoom lens and scans around the rocks.
And yet there's nobody there yet. Still a bit cold, I think. But we'll just have another, we'll have a look on some of the rocks a little bit lower down the valley side where they've got a bit more sun and a bit less of the breeze and see what we can see.
We walk down a bit and scan the other side of the rock. And this time, Anna spots something.
Oh, there it is. Yeah, oh, it's moving. See it moving down. It's just down the shade stem, just below that ledge there. You can see it moving along. So I was interested in coming back out.
Following Anna's directions, I scan with my camera, looking into the viewfinder, and there it is, the Otago skink. A long black lizard, about 25 centimeters in length, with patterns of yellowish golden blotches all along its body and a long tail. It is found only in Otago and very sparsely distributed, so it's one of the very rare skinks in New Zealand. With its patterns, the skink blends in well with a lichen-covered rock around it, so it was hard to find for my untrained eyes.
Oh, I find it so engaging just looking for them. It's quite addictive, really. When I started looking for them, I just found myself thinking about them. I'd lie in bed at night, you'd see these lizards swimming in front of your eyes, the shapes, the patterns of them on the rocks, and I'd just want to keep coming back, looking for more of them. It's so beautiful on the rock too, each time you see one.
Anna is part of the team at the Mokomoko Dryland Sanctuary, working to protect and monitor these rare reptiles. The country has two types of lizards, skinks and geckos. Skinks have a shiny skin and smaller eyes, whereas geckos have larger eyes and granular scales. Most of Aotearoa New Zealand's reptile species are so rare that they are out of sight and not much is known about them. While working on this episode, I learned that the country has a great diversity of reptiles with 125 species of lizards, which is pretty high for a small country with a cold climate. A country with a similar size and climate, the United Kingdom, has just 3 native lizard species.
If you dig deep into New Zealand lizards, you find a whole lot of stuff that's amazing.
This is Grant Norbury, a wildlife ecologist with Manaaki Whenua Landcare Research. He's one of the key members who created the Mokomoko Dryland Sanctuary.
A lot of people find lizards not particularly cuddly. They find them a bit creepy. Well, that's okay. That's fine. But a lot of other people think, wow, what an amazing fauna that we don't really know a lot about. For one, given the climate of New Zealand and the size of the country, the diversity of reptiles is really high. And the lizards are across a range of habitats, some right up in the Alps, right down into the lowlands. And they have peculiar breeding behaviour. They all give birth to live young, except for one species. They're very long-lived, they're slow to mature, they have a low number of babies. Everything's just geared right down. And it's very, very interesting. And they're a critical part of the ecosystem. A lot of them spread seeds, native seeds. Some pollinate plants. So we need to understand them and conserve them.
My name is Karthik, and this is Tune Into Nature, a podcast bringing you sounds and stories from the wild. We journey through Aotearoa, New Zealand's wild places to meet unique wildlife and hear from the people working to protect them. I hope these stories will inspire you to enjoy nature in your own way. Grant, Anna, and the team from the Mokomoko Dryland Sanctuary are working to reintroduce rare lizards back into the central Otago drylands where they were once widely present. I tag along with the team when they are doing a survey for the skinks along with the Department of Conservation. We are in the Mokomoko Dryland Sanctuary, a fenced pest-free sanctuary in the hill country of central Otago. I could see rocky peaks called tors all around, with regenerating native shrubs and a panoramic view of the Otago drylands.
Classic central Otago schist rock outcrops. It's a very special sort of a landscape for New Zealand and very different. There's not a lot of it in New Zealand, these sort of beautiful schist slabs. And it's representative of the what we call the dry land zone of New Zealand, which is only about, it's about a fifth of New Zealand, which is a big land area. Almost half of New Zealand's threatened plant species occur in these dry land systems, and 70% of them are lost to agricultural development. So they're pretty special, and the schist rock outcrops make very special habitat for a lot of lizard species that live amongst those rock outcrops. It provides refuge from the hot summers we have here and the freezing cold winters. They get deep into those cracks, and it's very special for a whole suite of lizard species.
The lizards were once abundant in the region, but with introduced pests and habitat destruction, only some species survived and most of them went locally extinct. And when two species of lizards, Otago skinks and grand skinks, were on the verge of extinction, the Department of Conservation decided to come up with a recovery program. Grant has been involved in this program and he set up the Central Otago Ecological Trust to start a community project and reintroduce the lizards back into Central Otago. Grant is the chairperson of the trust and Anna is one of the trustees. It took a slow and steady process with a lot of trial and error.
We initially thought we need to breed up captive bred animals, get them breeding in captivity to get lots of juveniles that we can introduce into the wild behind a predator-proof fence. So we built small cages, to specifications that other people use across the country for keeping lizards, and they just didn't work that well because of the winter refuge that you need. See, these animals live in rock cracks that are attached to massive rock cracks in massive tors that go deep into the earth, and so they maintain a steady degree above zero during winter. But we weren't able to simulate that in Alexandra. So that was a learning curve. So we were hankering to get them out into the wild. We were working with James Reardon then from the Department of Conservation, and James and I, we worked together quite a lot. I was sitting out here with James one day sort of contemplating, it's not working holding them in small cages, we need to get out here, but I don't want to build a big fence. And James said, well, just build a tiny fence. Okay, we'll build a tiny fence. And it was a tiny fence. It was only 180 metres perimeter, 0.3 of a hectare. So it wasn't really sustainable for lizard conservation, but it was a test. It was a pilot study. And we learnt so much from that pilot study. It went well. We had babies. Mice got in at one point, started attacking the lizards. We saw we had some Dutch intern students one day watching a mouse attacking our 30 centimetre long lizards, making them bleed. Survival went down, and we analysed all that data and published it in a science journal because it was really important to know that. That confirmed for us that if we're going to be successful with this work, we need to build a bigger fence that's a Rolls-Royce fence that'll keep everything out, including mice, which means it's more expensive. So that's what we did. But mice still get in fences, so you need to be very vigilant of mice.
The Mokomoko Dryland Sanctuary was established with a 1.6-kilometre fence enclosing a 14-hectare area, a relatively safe haven for the endangered reptiles.
So when they built the fence, there were already three of the more common lizard species living on this bit of land. There were the schist geckos, and there's also McCann skinks, small brown skink, and the southern grass skink as well, that likes the long grass and the tussock. So those species were already here before the fence went up. And then since then, they've introduced grand skinks, which are a large species, about 25 centimetres long, beautiful gold speckled skink that lives in the schist rock. Also Otago skinks, they're a little bit bigger again, good sort of foot long, they can grow to quite a solidly built animal, black and gold. We've also introduced jewelled geckos into the shrubs in the gully. Beautiful bright green gecko with these diamond patterns down its back. So once a year we have, Doc will organise a really full survey of the whole sanctuary, trying to count as many grand and Otago skinks as we can. So that gives us a really good benchmark each year of how the population's going.
The survey happens over 3 days to try and scout the sanctuary for as many grand and Otago skinks as possible. I tagged along with Gary Knox while he was doing the survey for the skinks.
Yeah, the grass is alive with skinks today. Every meter.
Gary is a herpetologist, a zoologist who studies reptiles.
As we're walking through the grass here, you can see little skinks running around everywhere. You just see the movement in the grass?
Yep.
So it's a sign of a healthy ecosystem. Yep. Seeing such an abundance of skinks running around enjoying their day in the grass. So this is a southern grass skink, a small brown skink that really likes damp habitat. So they really like it down in this gully here where it's a bit damp, and there's hundreds and hundreds of them in the sanctuary here, probably thousands. As a kid, I enjoyed climbing the hills and mountains in the Mackenzie country and just exploring nature.
Working on a project for his wildlife management course, Gary encountered a special lizard in the wild that would inspire him to dive deep into the world of lizards.
Apart from seeing a few skinks and sort of common species of lizard as a kid in the Mackenzie country, this was my first time I'd really learnt a lot about a New Zealand gecko and really focused on geckos. And yeah, I just became really fascinated with the jewel gecko. The jewel gecko is probably one of New Zealand's most beautiful reptiles. Bright green colour with bright white or yellow diamond patterns on its back. So they're really beautiful geckos that are active during the daytime. So you can go out and do your research during the day and see them basking in their natural habitat.
Reptile life in Aotearoa is so diverse that new species of lizards are still being discovered.
I've been fortunate enough to be on the field team which discovered a new species of gecko. We were doing a survey for skinks and for a rare skink in the Ida range of North Otago. Just by complete chance, happened upon a new species of geckos. My colleague Tony Jewell lifted a big rock and picked up this lizard and straight away knew it was a new species, and I was just 20 metres away from him and he's like, "Gary, get over here now." His hands were shaking with excitement, and we both knew straight away, looking at this gecko, that this was a new species to science. So that was really exciting. A sort of brownish olive green, and it has this beautiful white speckled pattern all over its back and sides. These white speckles kind of look like the night sky, like the galaxy. When we saw these speckles on the back, we decided that an appropriate species name would be Galaxias, after the galaxy. And sure enough, a few years later, we scientifically described the gecko as Mokopiriraku galaxias. And the local iwi at Karitane, they chose the name Hutetiao Gecko, a Māori name. And the name refers to the breaking of the dawn. This is because the gecko has these bright orange lips, look much like the breaking of the dawn. So yeah, it was quite an appropriate, both the common name referring to the gecko's lips and the scientific name referring to the galaxy-like pattern on its back.
Hutetiao gecko was discovered in 2018, and not much is known about how many of them exist.
I get to go to some sort of quite exciting, very remote parts of the country that not many people get to see, and work with some amazing wildlife. But it is tough though at times, because I have to spend a lot of time away from home. So I have to spend a lot of time away from my kids. I do get physically and mentally exhausted at times from climbing up and down mountains looking for lizards and just working, you know, 12-hour days trying to find species that are difficult to find. We also have to do night work. For some species, go out late at night, shining our torch around for 5 hours trying to find geckos. Yeah, and I have to work weekends and sometimes, you know, through the holidays. And it is a lot of fun, but you've got to be very adaptable and you've got to work long hours and work hard. But yeah, I think it's worth it.
Back at the survey, Gary is scanning the rocks for grand skinks, a long black skink with yellowish dash-like patterns. The rock outcrops are all numbered to identify where the skinks are, so we are on rock 6.
It's just... there it goes. It's back out in the sun. Now we can get a photo.
Gary spots a grand skink sitting under a ledge.
So when we find a skink, we try and photograph both the left side of the skink and the right side of the skink. And we use the patterns on the side of the skink from the forelimb to the snout to identify the skinks. So every skink in the population has a different pattern. And the patterns on the sides of the skinks are basically like a fingerprint. All of the skinks we find get catalogued. We also record whether it's an adult or a juvenile, what rock we found it on, and what time we saw it.
I walk to the other side of the sanctuary to catch up with the Department of Conservation staff to hear about what they have been seeing. Here's Catherine Longstaff, Senior Ranger for Biodiversity, Central Otago. She points to the rock to show me something even smaller than the skinks.
Can't really see, but in here we can see the poo of the skink. So you can see there it's little white, it's really small and little white little ovals. So most of the skinks in New Zealand don't lay eggs, they have live young, so even though they're white, it's poo, not eggs. Today's my first day out here, my first day ever actually. So I manage the program of biodiversity for Central Otago, so normally I don't get to even come out. I'm normally doing, you know, spreadsheets and emails and budgets and meetings, so it's a really great day for me.
And here is biodiversity ranger Ross Curtis.
It's just quite cool seeing these wee skinks. And the very first one we found, we took a photograph, and then after a few seconds, it just ran across the rock for a few minutes and then turned around and ran the other way. And they're really quick. It's quite fascinating just to watch how quick they can be, because they'll sit stationary for hours, it seems. But when they want to, off like a rocket. But yeah, it's quite cool to watch them run.
So I was on rock 13, which probably doesn't mean anything to you, but I found 5 otagos there, so that was really exciting. You know, it was a good result. One of them evaded me. I saw it at first, and then it shot under a rock. It was a little bit shy, so I had to wait around, you know, for like 40 minutes or so, and kept sort of circling and coming back, and then it came out again, so I could take a photograph of it. So that was really good.
You heard from Joanna, a Department of Conservation ranger. Anna and the Department of Conservation staff worked to identify the photos taken on the survey.
I love my days out here searching for the lizards. It's really exciting. And then I love going home and in the evening. I'm always really excited once the kids are in bed. I sit down straight away and I get out my either memory card from the camera and I bring up all the photos I got. And I go through and I choose the best left-hand side and the best right-hand side photo from each animal from the day. And then I go through and I open up the file that's got all the photos of all the left sides of all the otago skinks in the sanctuary, and I flick through them until I see the one that matches the photo that I have of that animal I saw today. Sometimes it's really simple. Other times, if you've been at a slightly odd angle or your lizard's a little bit obscured by something, that can be quite a challenge as well. But again, it's something you get better at. I've looked through so many now, often the patterns jump out at me quite quickly and I can match those. Again, it won't be telling us how many grand or otago skinks live in the sanctuary. We know we're only ever going to see a portion of them, but it gives us some idea.
When we think of pollinators of plants, we usually think of birds and bees, but lizards can also do the job.
Yeah, so here's the plant I wanted to show you. It's called the porcupine shrub. Scientific name is Melocytus alpinus, but it's the one that they reckon is developed for lizards, really adapted with lizards, because see, it's got these barbs, these quite wooden barbs, sort of a couple of inches long. So they're really good protection for the lizards. So they'll often bask nearby to one of them. They can dash in underneath. Then in springtime or in summer, they'll have these little flowers, and the flowers point downwards, and the pollen is at the bottom of the flower. So when the skinks weave their way through, the pollen will get onto their backs, so they're actually the main pollinators of this. And then at the end of summer, its berries are a white colour, and the berries are inside that layer of barbs, so they're not there for birds. We know that because, well, white's not so visible for birds anyway. White's the colour that the lizards see really well. They see blue and white well. Birds are more drawn to the red and orange, so these white berries, they're there for lizards, and they're under the barbs, so the lizards can
can forage for the berries while they're protected under those barbs. So it's a great example of plants that are co-evolved with lizards.
Due to the dry habitat of lizards in central Otago, there's always a risk of fire, and climate change could make it worse.
Fire can be really devastating for lizards, especially species such as jewel gecko, which live in the shrubland and the grass, and some of our skinks. About 2 or 3 years ago, there was a big tussock fire in the Lammermoor Range near Middlemarch, and we think that fire killed thousands of jewel geckos and skinks in that area. So that was quite devastating. There was about 4,500 hectares of lizard habitat was burnt. But yes, you don't really hear anything about that in the media and the impact it has on the lizards. So I would hope that people can be really careful not to light fires in tussock grassland. I definitely think that climate change, just general drying out of the habitat, is going to increase the fire risk and possibly means that the fires will spread further. Damp gullies or creeks that used to be fire breaks may no longer function that way, just because it's drier and the fire can spread through those areas more easily. So that means that we need to be even more careful.
The survey results for 2023 continue to show an upward trend. In 2020, there were 5 newborn skinks for both the species, and this year, the numbers have gone up to 19 for grand skinks and 20 for the Otago skinks. The lizards are slowly but steadily making their way back into central Otago.
So we currently have 10 lizards that are just as rare as the kakapo. I definitely think that they're something that we want to look after and make sure it's here for future generations to enjoy. Lizards are part of a healthy ecosystem, so along with birds and invertebrates, so I think we have to look after the whole ecosystem.
I'm actually currently writing a book about New Zealand's lizards. I've got so interested in lizards from the work I've been doing out here, and I've become so aware that a lot of New Zealanders don't know about their lizards, just like I didn't know about our lizards. So I've realised that, yeah, we need to tell these stories. So that's become my mission with the book that I'm working on, to share the stories of our amazing lizard species with more of our population.
Vision for the future is to allow the public to come in here, walk around these beautiful schist rocks and just see these native lizards out on these rocks, absolutely, or in the shrubs in the case of jewel geckos and the grass, and just seeing the beautiful colours and getting an idea of what used to be here. And especially kids, getting kids out here and seeing that sort of stuff, it really, it's so inspiring to see that. And at the moment, we've kind of got to hunt them out, I guess, still, because they're not that abundant. But one day, they're going to be much more abundant, we think, than what they are now, because they're just starting to spread out from the release rocks where we release them. So one day, the sanctuary will be quite full up of abundance of lizards where you don't have to necessarily hunt them out. They'll be sort of there for you to see.
Recently, the team has released a new species of lizard, the Otago green skink, into the sanctuary. It's an exciting time for the team, and they hope the green skinks also do well in their new safe home. You're listening to Tune Into Nature with me, Karthik. Reptiles are one of the lesser-known animals in New Zealand. You can learn more about them at the Mokomoko Dryland Sanctuary's informative website at mokomokosanctuary.com. On the website, you can subscribe to the sanctuary's newsletters or support their work through a donation. There's a link in the show notes. We will be back with more great stories about wildlife and nature, so please follow the podcast on your favorite listening app. And while you're there, please leave a rating. That would really help. The podcast is kindly supported by the New Zealand Lottery Grants Environment and Heritage Fund, administered by Te Tari Tai Whenua, the Department of Internal Affairs. Supported by Professor Nancy Longnecker, Science Communication, University of Otago, and ORFM Dunedin. Thanks for listening.